This is the Veterinary Project Podcast, episode 061.
Welcome to the show created by vets featuring absolutely no pets. This is the Veterinary Project Podcast, hosted by Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light. Our resident veterinarians have swapped out their stethoscopes in favor of microphones to bring you the Veterinary Project Podcast, a show focused on real conversations, aimed to connect this amazing profession full of remarkable people. Through the sharing of collective stories and wisdom, and connecting over the many unique challenges we face, we invite you to join our community of veterinary professionals leading intentional lives. And now, here are the hosts of the Veterinary Project Podcast, Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light.
Hey everyone, welcome back. I hope you are having a fantastic week and happy Halloween week. Yes, that's right. Halloween deserves an entire week to celebrate it. Now, I know maybe not everyone shares my enthusiasm over Halloween, but I absolutely love it. Getting really excited here. I have a little two-year-old flamingo running around the house. She's fairly torn. She may be a unicorn or a zebra is the other front runner. So we shall see come Sunday which costume wins out. But nonetheless, Dad will be joining her dressed as a cow. So I'm pretty excited. I've got my cowbell. This cow has its nipple pierced. It's a pretty funky cow. So I am excited to go trick-or-treating. I hope all of you veterinarians out there get a chance maybe to relax a little bit over the weekend. I know coming off holidays like this, sometimes you can dread it a touch, just knowing that there's going to be some chocolate dogs coming in probably the next week, mostly with the wrapper still intact. So foreign body / chocolate toxicity mixed together. Fun times. Anywho, switching gears into today's episode and guest, another phenomenal guest, Dr. Hilal Duan, as far as I know, is the only veterinarian who is a clinical certified trauma professional. So a really interesting conversation around trauma. I learned a new word in this episode, traumatology. So just a great conversation with her. So Hilal completed veterinary school in 2015 at Massey University in New Zealand. During her final year of veterinary school, she was class president and launched the Veterinary Confessionals Project. After graduating, she moved to Maui, Hawaii, where she worked as both an emergency DVM as well as a general practitioner for 3 years. In 2017, she completed a certification as a human clinical trauma professional through the International Association of Trauma Professionals. She relocated to Denver, Colorado in 2018 and has been working as an emergency relief DVM since. Since 2015, she has been speaking and leading workshops at various veterinary conferences throughout the world on topics relating to the Veterinary Confessionals Project, traumatic stress, resilience, and well-being. She also writes and edits clinical and non-clinical articles for DVM 360 magazine. Her other passions outside of vet med involve biking, yoga, writing, cooking, comedy, sports, and traveling. Enjoy this conversation with Dr. Hilal Duan. All right, Hilal, thank you so much for joining us here today. Another one of, a Vetstagram friend. That's where we connected, was on social media. We've been wanting to get you on the podcast. We finally got a date nailed down. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, when we connected, I know that was quite a while ago, but I remember getting off of that conversation. And I have pages of notes written. I told Jonathan, I was like, that was a cool conversation. Like, we went into all sorts of things. You introduced a new word to me, which we're going to revisit later, traumatology. I had never heard of that. Found it fascinating.
Yeah, well, I mean, trauma is a very important topic right now in vet med, but also just in the world in general. And most of the time in medicine, when you say trauma, you're thinking of like the trauma unit, you're thinking like car accidents, you know, like physical trauma. But mostly what I like to talk about is psychological trauma. And when I refer to trauma, that's usually what I'm talking about.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to diving in. I'm going to back up a little bit because earlier in your journey as a veterinarian, back as a veterinary student in New Zealand, you started the Veterinary Confessionals Project. Tell us a little bit about that because some of our listeners may have not heard of this before.
Yeah, so the Veterinary Confessionals Project I started because I could understand from being in school after a few years that there was a lot of like secrets in vet med. I put it in quotation marks, air quotes. And like secrets is in the sense of like mental health secrets, like just things that are really tough in our profession that no one was really talking about very openly. Yet we were all spending all this money and time and energy like towards this career. Yet there was this like underlying emotional and just like darkness in a sense to veterinary medicine. And so I just want to bring that into light really and have more open conversations about it. And I had been following this project called Post Secret, which a lot of people may have heard of. It's been around for a really long time, almost like 20 years now. And it's a very similar project that like this guy, Frank Warren, he just like went out to a university campus, handed out a bunch of postcards and said, like, write a few sentences of something you've never told anyone before. So I just like was like, why don't we just do one like that for vet med and just talk specifically about, you know, our industry. And so we did that in the school and it was really awesome. Like so many people responded to it. We got so many secrets in and it really helped open up the conversation of things that people are afraid to talk about, like medical mistakes, for example. Like what do you do when you accidentally overdose a drug, and whether it kills the animal or not, or doesn't cause harm or does cause harm, those are still things that affect you as a professional. So the project really helped people see also that like they're not alone. So if any fears came up, any apprehensions, like it was just a platform to be able to share. And the best part about it was that it was completely anonymous. So basically, I just handed out postcards. People wrote like a few sentences of a confession of vet med on it, and it was anonymous and we posted them and then people could comment on it. And it just really helped like build this community that was focused on mental health. And I got the mental health department to back me up on the project too when I was starting it at the university. And from then I took it to a conference, the biggest vet conference in the United States and North America. And that was at the time NAVC, which is now VMX. And I just did like an art exhibit there and a bunch of people responded. And then from then on, we went on to Instagram and we worked with DVM360 and just kept posting secrets and kept. And now the Instagram is the main platform we use. And it's still like, every day I get emails or messages from people just thanking me for having that platform because there's so many new people coming into this profession too. So even if some of us older vets who have been around a while are like, oh yeah, been there, done that, I also see like it's really helping new grads and people who are still students find that like they're not alone in their fears and their worries, and there is a place you can share it and get support. And that's how the projects, and from then it just like I've written articles, done podcasts, like all these things based on the project.
Yeah, that's super cool how it started literally in your like at Massey, and then now you've taken it basically global. And it's funny, I really resonate when you said there's kind of like a secret, and there's almost two things there. There's the secret within vet med where for a long time it wasn't talked about. And then there's an even bigger gap between like those in vet med and then the general public, which lots of times doesn't see any of this. So I think getting the conversation rolling was a great start. What kind of drove you to do that? Like the desire to be like, you know what? No one's talking about this. I'm going to spearhead this and get the conversation going.
I think what kind of drove me to get it started was that, you know, we started getting this requirement to go to mental health classes that was put on by our mental health department. And everyone always complained about going to them. They'd be like, oh, these like mental health people, they don't know. None of them are vets. They were like, none of them have even worked a day in our job. Like, I would just listen to like the students complaining, and I loved those classes. Like, I always was super excited to go to them because we talked about like grief, and we talked about, I don't know actually if we ever talked about suicide, but it is also a big problem in vet med. But just, they were like, Massey was trying to like get a mental health like course class started, like while I was still in vet school there, but just the students were so anti going to them, and they'd figure out all these ways to like ditch the class. And I was like, you guys, this is really important. Like, but I could see where there was that disconnect. So I'm like, what if we did something that was like peer based or like community based, that people felt like they were actually understood and heard, and we still had mental health professionals on our side. So that kind of was, I think, what motivated me the most, was like just listening to them complain and just seeing how important it was though, and trying to figure out, okay, like, how do I get people to pay attention to this? How do I get people to actually care about it? And once like that project happened, then people were like, oh wow, because it hits them in a different spot, I think, emotionally. That's more relatable, and then they listen, or they actually care or pay attention.
Yeah. Oh, that's clever, because it can be challenging, you know, to get people to step into this subject, you know, especially if there's resistance there for whatever that reason may be. So coming at it from a different angle, maybe more of, you know, you can engage in this project when you're ready, as opposed, like, it's maybe a little bit more inviting is maybe what I'm seeing with it. So I like that.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was more inviting, and I don't know, I think the anonymity of it, like that they don't know who's written the confessions or the secrets, makes it seem like so many people would tell me, like, did I write this? Like, did I write this in my sleep? Like, that was the relatable part, is like so many people would turn to me and at conferences and stuff be like, I swear I wrote like half of these up here, but I didn't, you know?
Yeah. I'm thinking, I know I'm sending us on a tangent. I've been doing research into imposter syndrome, and I'd throw air quotes around the syndrome because I don't know if I agree that it's a syndrome. But anyway, one of the key things is leaning into it and sharing how you're feeling, right? Because if you just sort of hold it and bottle it up, you know, I've heard a lot of people feel great about sharing that with others, and then they're like, I feel the same way too, right? And then they can bond and grow through that. So I do think that commonality helps people move forward.
Yeah, definitely. And just realizing they're not alone, because I think there's such like a, in medicine, there's such a desire or a drive to be perfect. And, you know, we want to do things right. We want to save lives. We don't want to make mistakes. So there's even more pressure to be better. And yeah, the imposter syndrome, definitely, once like people share it more, they're like, oh, okay. Cause we're already beating ourselves up when we make mistakes or don't know something that we feel like we should know. So it's just nice to know that you're not alone in that.
Yeah. Okay. So moving forward a bit. So we have this interest that started during veterinary school, and you start this confessionals project. Since then, you have gone on, and you are a clinical certified trauma professional. Mm-hmm. And as far as we know, this was the first, again, I had heard of that training, and you're the only one in the veterinary space with this type of training. Tell us about that. Like, what is that designation?
Yeah. So I believe I'm the only veterinarian. About a year ago, I think there was a technician I saw who also got the same certification, but me and her, like, those are the only two people. So basically, what it is, it's an extra certification that mental health professionals normally complete, like licensed clinical social workers or like mental health counselors or therapists like can do, to learn more about traumatic stress and then how to manage traumatic stress reactions when they're in therapy with their patients, or like how they can talk about trauma with their clients. So I was allowed to do this course. I told them I was a vet and they're like, that's okay. As long as you're a medical professional, like you can still sign up. And it basically gave me the knowledge and the education around trauma, how it manifests in our psychology, in our physiology, our neurochemistry, neurobiology, and like how it impacts like how we respond to the world on a daily basis. So I really just wanted to dive deeper into it after I discovered what compassion fatigue was, because everyone in vet med was like talking about compassion fatigue. And I was like, what the heck is that? Like, I didn't understand it. They're like, don't get compassion fatigue. You know, it's like, okay, I don't really understand what it is. So once I started reading more about it, I learned that compassion fatigue was also known as secondary traumatic stress syndrome. And then I was like, okay, so then what is secondary trauma? And then that's what like, I then finally dived into this whole like world of trauma and why I went to get my certification, because I really just wanted to know more and I'm a lifelong learner. So, and if it was going to make me a better doctor and have a better quality of life, yeah, like I wanted to get educated on it. And then once I learned so much about it, I was like, oh my gosh, like this impacts us every day in vet med, like trauma and traumatic stress. And we need to be talking about this and we need to know what it is and how people react when they're under traumatic stress and how you can recover from it and like heal your nervous system and be more overall, like have a better wellness in your life.
Okay. Well, let's dive into that. I think to layer into this, maybe let's start with primary versus secondary trauma, just to lay that out. And then we can dive into, you know, how that manifests and how we can tactically start to overcome that.
Yeah. So I'm just going to kind of briefly give you the definitions, but the more intricate, detailed definitions that a mental health professional would be used is found in the DSM manual, which is like, if you guys need to go look that up for any of the listeners, just, you know, you can find the DSM online and look up the definitions. But basically primary trauma.
And sorry, Hillel, I don't even know what the DSM is. So we got to clarify that up.
Yeah. So it's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Health Disorders.
Okay.
The DSM for short. Okay. So it's what all therapists, like anybody who's going to therapy or anyone who's seeing a psychiatrist or psychologist or mental health professional would use to give you a diagnosis of a mental health disorder, whether that's depression or anything from depression to bipolar to schizophrenia to PTSD. Just like to give the general, because I'm not a mental health professional, so don't want to be giving any diagnoses out to people on podcasts or lectures or anything.
Absolutely.
So. What would she diagnose us as, Mike?
It'd be a long list.
A long list.
And you know, it's funny because I've gone to like the traumatology conference, well, the largest trauma conference every year in Boston with Dr. Bessel van Dr. Kulk. He's like one of the godfathers of trauma right now. And he's like, the DSM is great for like insurance purposes or for like helping people kind of understand, like categorize mental health issues. But he's like, at the same time, it does kind of pigeonhole people and it has its own faults as well. So take it with a grain of salt is what I would say.
Okay. So yeah, primary and secondary, let's dive in there.
So primary trauma is when you observe a traumatic event that happens directly to you. And this traumatic event normally consists of like extreme horror, extreme fear, and helplessness. So those are kind of like the three key emotions fear, horror, I mean, fear, helplessness, and also the feeling that like your life might be at risk or your integrity of your life might be at risk and you might be exposed to physical harm. So that can be anything from a traffic accident, a dog bite or animal attack, human attack, rape, any of those, like anything that happens directly to you that results in you feeling those feelings during the event and after. The secondary trauma is basically those same feelings, like an event that occurs, whether it's actual physical event or not. It could even be, you know, someone just verbally abusing you, like verbally screaming at you. But sorry, that's going back to primary, but or if you're observing this happening to someone, it's secondary trauma. So if you read about a car accident, like, or watch a video of a car accident, that could traumatize you, even though you're not injured, there's no physical harm, you're not horrified, you're not like in extreme fear or feelings of helplessness. So that's basically the main difference. And in vet med, they say that we primarily have secondary trauma, which is why I guess we primarily have compassion fatigue, but we also have a lot of primary trauma. So I just like initially was talking a lot about secondary trauma, but now I just like talk about trauma in general because the symptoms are the same, the feelings that arise are the same, and how it can affect your nervous system are the same. It's just the main difference is like, did it happen directly to you or to something or someone else?
Okay. Well, yeah. Tell us more on that, on how that manifests, whether it's primary or secondary.
Yeah. So, a lot of the vet confessionals, like secrets that I was reading, I started seeing, like after I learned about trauma, I'm like, oh wow. Like there was one confession that someone sent that said they'd been badly bitten on the hand by a German Shepherd. And ever since then, like if a German Shepherd comes in, like they just begin to sweat. Like if they see it on the schedule, if they hear like there's a German Shepherd waiting, like, and they'll try and like, they'll either like go into this kind of panic attack mode, or again, like it can manifest very differently. Some people will shut down and like try and not see that animal. Like they'll try and avoid seeing that. So like that could be a result of primary trauma, just getting really badly injured on the job, like getting bitten by an animal. So that's a very simple example. Secondary trauma is more complicated. I have another one on the Instagram, like vet confessionals that I refer to a lot. And it's a technician that was sitting at the microscope doing, you know, just looking at cytology and heard like a loud noise in the room and didn't realize like the doctor was being mauled by a dog in the consult room. And so now every time that person goes back to the microscope, they get like shaky and anxious and they like don't want to be at the microscope. If they hear like a loud noise, they're re-triggered into thinking like, oh my gosh, it's happening again. So that could be potentially secondary traumatic stress from like an event that didn't happen to them, but happened to someone else. So those are just two brief examples, but there's so many ways that trauma can manifest. I mean, from medical mistakes, like when you're in surgery and you accidentally like cut a blood vessel that you're not supposed to, and then blood starts like pooling and you start like shaking and you're just like, oh my gosh, like what am I gonna do? And you know, you start like kind of hyperventilating, sweating. Some people will faint like as a response as well. Had that happen when I was in vet school, like during surgery, unfortunately, because then you can like overheat under all the surgical garments and stress. And so that the result of that might be depending on, even if the patient, like you call another doctor in and they fix it for you and everything, you can still be traumatized because, and not want to do surgery again, for instance, or like that specific surgery. I had that happen when I was interning somewhere where the doctor accidentally cut the, they were just doing a routine spay, which is like removing the female ovaries and uterus of a dog, and they accidentally cut the kidney out instead of the ovary, and then they had to like euthanize the animal. So things like that happen in vet med all the time, and it can be really traumatic, and it can be like, I could go on and on if you guys want more examples.
Well, I'm interested because where we're, I want to move to some tactical examples we can give our listeners on how we can deal with trauma. One more sort of step on that journey is, so it's manifesting, but what is happening like anatomically or in our neurology, just briefly, so we can understand it? Because I'm assuming when we get to tactics, what we're doing is kind of intercepting it in those spots and putting a spin on it. So what is going on in our anatomy, in our like neurobiology, and then moving into tactically, what can our listeners do if they are experiencing some of these manifestations that you've described or things they can work on?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what's basically, that's a great question, Michael, because like what's happening is your brain immediately goes into fight or flight mode, which everyone knows, like fight or flight, like they've heard, but which basically is a normal system in our biology to be able to run away from danger, to be able to protect ourselves if we're being attacked. So your heart rate will increase, you'll start secreting more adrenaline. So you might start to get more shaky. You might start to sweat. Your body is kind of like preparing for a threat. So it's just interesting that that happens, you know, in a seemingly non-threatening environment, but like in surgery, for instance, you're more like worried that this animal is going to die. So you're kind of taking on the stress response of that. So you're either going to prepare to flee, like want to run away, which some people have done or will do. You'll freeze. That's another response where you just can't even function. And that's also a protective response. Like animals, when they play dead, it is kind of like a last resort. It's coming from the same response, and it comes from your amygdala. So your amygdala in your brain is where your fight or flight response comes from, but it's also freeze is another one of them that's really important to distinguish, because people just think like you either run away or you start freaking out and like attacking people or verbally attacking or, you know, physically, but you can also freeze as well. So those are usually the manifestations that happen in that fight or flight response. And then what you should be able to do, or what you could try and do, depending on what your primary response is. So like for me, it's definitely to flee. And I also get like, I can tell, like, cause I pay attention. I'm like, oh, my heart rate's like gone crazy. I'm like sweating, I'm shaking more, you know, and then I have to try and calm down my nervous system. So I have to do things that counteract that. So at that point, my sympathetic nervous system is in high drive, like it's gone off the deep end. So I have to activate my parasympathetic nervous system, which I can do by taking deep breaths. That's like one very easy thing to do, is just taking deeper breaths, because that actually stimulates your vagus nerve, which is directly connected to your parasympathetic, to slow down your heart rate, to slow down your blood pressure, to slow down the sweating, and to go try and go back into rest and digest mode, which is the counter mode to fight or flight. And then you can think more clearly, because your oxygen's like coming back into your brain and not going to all your extremities trying to like run away or fight. So then you can think more clearly and come up with a solution and potentially like save yourself from getting traumatized, actually, like if you can think through the situation. So your goal is to try and not react immediately, and to try and bring yourself back to a place of like being able to think clearly. If you're someone who goes into freeze mode, though, you actually need something to like activate you. So like, because you're already shut down, so you're not immediately going to be like, oh, deep breathing. That's not, because you're kind of going to the lower end of your nervous system where everything's just shutting down. So like, I mean, I joke sometimes, like someone needs to literally throw a cold water in your face to like bring you back to life, or like slap you in the face. I mean, like that's when like people like shake other people and like, come on, hello, are you there? You have to like do something. So I tell people, like, if you can just step away and like literally go to the bathroom and like put cold water on your face, like ice cold water, and like cold water on your wrist, like try and bring yourself back to reality. That can help if you're the type of person who tends to shut down. So I think knowing like which reaction you're having is really important. And then the counterbalance for that is going to look different. For instance, like Wim Hof, do you guys know who Wim Hof is? Yeah. He uses cold therapy a lot. Like he likes the ice cold therapy. And I think that does have a lot of benefits to your nervous system, and that like bringing it back to a regulation using the cold therapy tactic. And then so therapists say like those are things you can do in the moment, but then you can continue doing those things whenever you feel triggered, or just normally, even if you're not feeling like the anxiety or the shutdown, you should still be doing that if you get triggered easily. So like if the thought of a German Shepherd like coming in and you see it on the appointment schedule and you're already sweating and shaking, that means you still are having a psychological response to a past event that's still manifesting in your brain and body today. And that can be from 10 years ago and it's still going to manifest. And so self-awareness is super important here, because it's how you're going to figure out like what you need to do for your body mm-hmm. and your brain. Does that make sense?
Yes. I've got lots of notes coming here, and I know this is probably beyond this conversation. I know you and I had a brief chat on like rapid eye movement reestablishment patterns, right? And there's a whole field of therapy there aimed at, you know, rewiring how you respond to triggers. But I mean, we probably won't get there. I'm coming back to what you had mentioned, how people respond differently. I'm thinking this is super important as a veterinary team, that these conversations happen far in advance. Because like in the moment when it's bang, this event is happening, there's not going to be time for everyone to stop and be like, well, that person freezes, so we should probably get them some cold water, right? Like when you work with teams, and I don't mean that to come off as a joke, but it is like preparation would be so important here. When you work with veterinary teams, how do you, you know, maybe coach them on that or tell them to prepare in advance for these situations?
Well, what I was mainly working on initially with veterinary teams is just like educating them on like all the details of trauma and like how that manifests, like more than what we're diving into here. And after we get through that and I have them self-evaluate like their own traumas, or like, and they'll come up with examples of like, you know, where they remember in vet med, like something happened. And honestly, so many people who have left vet med have a story where something very traumatic happened and then they decide to stop practicing. And that's where I'm just like, oh, like, see, that's great if you can pinpoint that. But then like from there, you have to be able to communicate to your team members, like what your needs are. So first recognizing like how you respond, and then putting yourself into positions where you feel safe, like communicating that with your team members is really important. Cause there are certain times where like, we're not going to know ahead of time, like what the right thing to do is. Like there was this one situation where a dog escaped from like one of the staff members that was like out walking the dog, and it was in the hospital for diarrhea, and they just like took it out to be walked, and I guess like they tripped or something and the dog ran off into the street and got hit by a car and died. And that was very traumatic because like the animal died. And so that person observes secondary trauma. And then you have like the owners coming at you. And in that moment, that person was like inconsolable. I mean, rightfully so, but you're just going to try and like do your best and like get them water, like get them to try and breathe, tell them it's going to be okay. Like in that moment, when someone is extremely emotional, the best thing you can try and do is figure out like, how do I get them back to like a state of calm? And if they're shut down, like, how do I get them to just like come out of like that fetal position? Or how do I get them, like, because some people will literally go into the fetal position if they're that like overwhelmed. And then you try and like bring them water. You just have to try and do like whatever you can do to get them back. And that's not the time to be like, well, you should have like done this. And it's not the time to talk about like, how can we learn from this, you know? Like, and that's another really key thing that I feel like people don't get is like in that emotional like storm that that person is in, that's not the time to like reprimand them or make them feel worse for what happened. Or, you know, it's just to take care of their emotional and their physical needs. Like, apply first aid is like, I wrote, I think, an entire article about like how to apply emotional and mental health first aid. And that's just by like kind of trying to communicate with the person and like get their needs met in that moment.
Okay. And I mean, that makes sense. That's fascinating. In the veterinary profession, I mean, like you said, we don't know what each day is going to bring. We do know that if we do this job long enough, we're going to encounter stressful situations. What can vets be doing, you know, like in advance at home when they're not in the vet clinic at all, you know, to be like readying themselves or sort of preparing or like, I don't know, building that muscle? I know this isn't a muscle per se, but so to, in a figure of speech.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of is. Like, some of the things that I recommend doing are like actually putting yourself in stressful situations and then trying to recover from them quickly. So like one of the things that I do is like go rock climbing, which I'm like extremely terrified of doing, and will go into fight or flight mode, like at the top of the rock, you know. But, and then you're supposed to like try and fall off the rock and like pretend like, you know, you're going to be fine, which you are going to be fine most likely. But there's that, like, you know, so it's kind of like called stress inoculation. Like, and I think the military uses those kind of tactics too, but to way more extremes, where they like tear gas people and like make, I'm not saying like we should do that, but like you, I mean, we could potentially, but like you want to like put yourself into stressful situations where you already know like what you need to do to overcome, or where you can safely practice like your deep breathing techniques. Like when I'm clinging onto the side of that wall, like technically I know I'm safe, but I can already tell like my physiology doesn't feel safe. So like my heart's racing, it's like, or skipping beats, and I'm like, you know, clinging on for dear life, and I have to try and like make another move to get up or let go. Either way, I don't want to do either of those because I'm stuck. So then how do I get myself to a place of like, okay, I can get through this? And for me, it's a lot of like the deep breathing technique. That's one very simple one that I use a lot. So I would say like, figure out, is there a type of environment? Like for some people, it might be like some, it doesn't have to be a physical activity. It could be like practicing on virtual reality, like some stuff. Like one of the trauma conferences I went to, they had you go underwater with virtual reality, like by a whale. And it was kind of scary because, and then like a shark and stuff, and you, and they like see how you react, or they have you like go all the way up high, like onto a rooftop plank. And like, if you make the wrong move, you fall off. So like, you can even find like simulations that could help you with that. It again falls into kind of a personal category of like, what do you do when you're really stressed, and what can you do to bring yourself back to a place of homeostasis, like as we call it.
And is this, 'cause I know you spent some time with firefighters, right? As part of your program training, you attended firefighting programs. Cause I mean, I think that the human side of this is much further ahead than the veterinary side. Is that where, like, is this programs that they are implementing, or where does these ones come from?
Well, they're not really implementing those yet. Those were some things I picked up from like the trauma conferences. What the well-being department of the firefighters are doing is mainly trying to like, again, like practice the self-awareness and the education around trauma. And then they also have like a, after the traumatic event occurs, they have like a debriefing they do where they get together as a group and they do like a talk therapy kind of situation where they all sit together and like talk if they want to talk. If they don't want to talk, then they don't, because like they go to a lot of like, especially fatal fire calls or like mass shooting type calls where it's mainly like in that moment, as much as you can try and prepare for, you know, the drills and everything you do, nothing can really prepare you for what you're going to see like in real life. And so afterwards they do like a diffusing kind of debrief situation, but they're like, first, we just make sure everyone's physical needs are met. Like if they need to get food, water, like clothes, sleep. And then he's like, we try and like all get together, only the people who were in the actual event attend. And then after that, for more long-term therapy, the primary tactics they use is like the rapid eye movement therapy that you were referring to before, also known as EMDR, where they work with a therapist to reintegrate. So what that does is like, it helps like in the brain, the way like a traumatic memory is stored, it can trigger your nervous system at any moment. Like sometimes it's even just like a noise, like that example I gave from the person at the microscope. And so what happens is if you're realizing like, oh, it's EMDR can be used for like specific traumatic memories where it helps you through the bilateral movement of moving your eyes a certain way while talking about the traumatic event with a qualified therapist, helps you reintegrate that memory as a like non-traumatic memory. So then it can like not activate your nervous system. It's very interesting. Or they will do, if they don't use EMDR, they also do something called neurofeedback. And neurofeedback is another like post-traumatic event therapy that they use. But I don't know enough about neurofeedback to explain anything about it today. I just know that it's a type of therapy that it works really well. And that's all I know. Yeah.
Nice. No, that's fair. I can tell, like, I don't know anything about EMDR, but I can see that's a rabbit hole I'll probably throw myself down. I find that stuff fascinating. Anything to add, Jonathan? Any questions you want to ask before we head into the impact round?
No, I'm such a beginner, so I am in listening mode, that's for sure. And, you know, we handled these both first person and second person traumas at vet clinics fairly commonly. It's then what can we do about it, which I think is great to hear that you're down that road for professionals that need that help.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to move us in. If you have any final words to say on this before the impact round.
Well, I was just going to say, that's why like a lot of like the wellness people like also say like yoga, meditation, like mindfulness practices, because I know it sounds kind of like, okay, like not everyone's going to do yoga and mindfulness, but actually the effects that it does have on your nervous system, for instance, like with yoga, EMDR, like the rapid eye movement therapy, uses like bilateral movement, like, so because you have two eyeballs and you're moving them simultaneously in whichever direction. So there is like a way of calming your nervous system through bilateral movement, which yoga uses a lot of as well. And soldiers in the army, like when they march, like marching is a type of bilateral movement as well to calm, like all those things. It's just really interesting, like how it does actually help you to prepare for something quite stressful. Yeah. So
is that, that's all. I know, I know I said I was going to wrap up. Now I have another question. Is that in yin yoga, like the body keeps score? Is this where this comes from? Or
so, yeah, in The Body Keeps the Score, which is the book written by Bessel van der Kolk, where he talks about like yoga and mindfulness, and a small section of a very detailed book about trauma. Yeah, he does talk about those subjects. And yin yoga is actually more focused on staying in one position and stretching out your fascia. So your fascia is the connective tissue between your like joints and muscle, and like it covers a lot of your muscle. And it's, so they say, like the traumatologists say, that's where a lot of traumatic energy can be stored. I know I'm putting it in air quotes because it sounds like woo-woo or whatever, but like your body does store trauma in certain places in your physical muscles, joints, fascia. And so yin focuses on stretching and bringing blood flow and nutrients to fascia. So that's where you can release, and through breath work, like all yoga involves a deep breathing or specific different types of breath work. So you can move that through your body. And Bessel van der Kolk does talk a lot about like how trauma is stored in our physical body as well as like our brain.
Interesting. Another book
for
the list for me. Okay, Hilo, we're getting to the end here on time. So we're going to pivot over to the impact round. We've got a series of questions for you. First up, are you a cat or a dog person?
That's a tough question, actually, because I was always more of a cat person when I was younger, because we were never allowed to have dogs as kids. And I'm originally from Turkey, and Turkish people are known for being obsessed with cats. I think there's even like a YouTube movie from Turkey, like that's just cats. But then as I got older and I had my first like real my own dog, I kind of became more of a dog person. I have to say dog.
Okay, true or false?
What about you guys? Wait,
we're both cat guys
through and through. Yeah, so we keep a running tally, and you were right here. Now you've come down to here.
Yeah, we had to drop you down in our ranking system based on that. True or false? I knew I wanted to be a veterinarian since I was a kid.
True.
Nice. How would your Cliche. Friends? It's all good. How would your friends describe what you do for a living?
My friends think I have the friends that aren't vets think I have the coolest job ever. My friends that are vets are they would just be like, yep, just another day as a vet, you know. But people who don't really understand vet med thinks it's amazing, and it is amazing in many ways, but there's, you know, like every job, there's things that are good and bad. So yeah.
Nice. What is your favorite hobby?
My favorite hobby, I would say, is this is hard to pick one. That's why I'm like, probably biking. I would have to say just like leisurely biking, though. I don't do any crazy mountain biking.
I was going to ask, because you're in Denver. I was wondering if this is mountain biking, but more.
No, I'm too old for that now. If I can't injure myself, like, and do the job that I do. So, and plus I don't like getting like shook, like all like mountain biking just like jostles you, you know.
Fair enough. What in this world are you most grateful for?
I'm most grateful for these questions are really tough.
Well, it's the impact round. They're supposed to get deeper.
Okay. I think honestly, I'm the most grateful for like all my knowledge. This is going to sound kind of cheesy, but I just recently went through something in life that was like super traumatic for me, and I was not expecting, like blindsided by it. And I think like I just remember, well, and even today, like every day, thinking how grateful I am that I understand how mental health impacts my physical health and how I can like heal and recover from things that are really traumatic. Not just like in my work life, but my personal life too. And like that, if I just apply like the tactics, that eventually I know that I will start feeling better and my mental health will improve and things will get better. So I think that's what I feel like is most top of mind for me. And I've just like, and yoga is super important. I don't count yoga as a hobby, which is why I didn't name it before, but I do it every day, like for my mental health and just other things like mindfulness and taking my time, like moving slower through the world, like taking my time to just take care of myself and saying no to like toxic people or like putting better boundaries, like all things that I had no idea about like 5 years ago. So I feel like I only just recently learned about how to take better care of my mental health. And I'm super grateful because I think it's going to be what like allows me to stay in a profession that I do love. Like every day I get to see those animals, like whether they're sick or not, it is really fun. And like working with people who feel that way about animals too, it's really cool. Like, cause there's a certain level of compassion and empathy that I feel like I connect to with people I work with. So yeah, just grateful for what I've learned. And I encourage everyone else to try and put their mental health first as well, above everything.
Nice. Kahi, well, thanks so much. I mean, I learned a lot in our conversations together. I'm sure there'll be more to come. Thank you so much for joining us here today. If any of our listeners would like to follow you, find you online and follow along, where can they track you down?
The best place to find me is on Instagram at Vet Confessionals. It's at Vet Confessionals. And then the website is another good place. It's www.veterinaryconfessionalsproject.com. But if you find the Instagram handle, you'll be able to find the website.
Excellent. And we'll drop those in show notes and online for everyone. All right, Hilal, as always, the final word here goes to you. What message do you want to leave for the veterinary community?
I just want to say, like, if you're feeling like you're struggling right now, or you're questioning like your decision to be in this profession, I would say, you know, take a break and take a step back and think about like what you really want to be doing for yourself. And like, it's okay if you decide that this isn't for you, but sometimes I think we just need to be able to take breaks to realize like, oh, we don't have to like completely throw the baby out with the bathwater, you know, like, so, and I think a lot of people just think it's black or white. So I would just say, maybe if you haven't been focusing on your mental health much, or you're not really focusing on your nutrition or whatever it is, or just yourself and your self-care, that might be contributing to it. So it's okay to take a break is all I'm going to say. And go boop a snoot too is another thing I love to say. Because do you guys boop your cat's snoots? You go like boop.
I had no idea what you were saying, but now it makes sense.
You don't know? Oh my gosh. This is like every time there's like a cute animal in the clinic, we'll always go boop. And I don't know, it just makes us happy. Like maybe it's just me and the weirdos I work with, but I'm pretty sure it's a thing. And if you Google it or look at it online, you'll find like probably tons of videos of people doing that. And it'll make you laugh.
Thank you for listening to the Veterinary Project Podcast. As a recap, on behalf of our hosts, the Veterinary Project Podcast will be releasing new episodes weekly. So be sure to tune in as we bring you more conversations aimed at helping you enjoy a life well lived. If you enjoyed what you heard on the show and you want to stay in the know, please like, love, and or subscribe to the podcast on the listening platform of your choosing, as we're available on all the usual suspects. If you know of others that may benefit from these conversations, we'd love it if you please share the show with them, as this will help us grow our community to reach more and more veterinary professionals. Speaking of which, if you are a veterinary professional and would like to get connected with more like-minded individuals who are joining us on this journey, please send an email to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll invite you to be a part of our private Facebook group. General feedback, requests for information, or perhaps requests to be a guest on the show can also be sent to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com. Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light, thank you for listening to the show, and we'll catch you again next week for another episode of the Veterinary Project Podcast. Bye for now.